We'll take your call, 617-779-7937, as we look forward to tomorrow night's preseason game between your New England Patriots and the Philadelphia Eagles, which I don't understand Josh McDaniel's hesitancy to say whether or not Drake May is playing or not.
Not his job. He doesn't want to, you know, that's that head coach's job, Rich. You know, you don't want to. I think that's why. Because he's not at liberty to. I just think Vrabel would be like, dude, why are you, you know, that's not your job to say anything. So that's my take on it. What do you think?
It's hard to believe they wouldn't have a plan by today, right?
I mean,
they
would. Yeah.
Do you think it's more likely he plays in this game? He didn't play in the first game. I don't think he would play in the second game.
When it was four games, the third game was always the one that you got the quarterback, right, the starter. But with the three, how they do it now? Are they playing the third one? I forget. It's like, usually, when does he go out there?
It's honestly changing, and you hear these reports they're going to go down to two preseason games, which makes sense, and then maybe they'll mandate these joint practices, but it's very weird. Yeah. You know, you had, like, Saquon Barkley talking about how much he hates the joint practices, but then again, he's like a veteran guy who doesn't need to make teams. It's the whole NFL preseason is a mess.
I think, Rich, there's every team does it differently. There's no kind of say. It used to be there's four preseason games. You play starters play the first quarter or couple series in the first preseason game. Then they bump it up to a quarter and a half, and then the third preseason game you play the first series into the second half, and then the fourth preseason game you don't play guys at all. Now, I mean, there's teams that don't even play their starters at all in preseason, and because they're doing more of these joint practices. So my guess is you will not see Drake May at all in tomorrow night's game.
Well, Jackson Dart got jacked up in that preseason game. You got hit in the didn't he get like concussed, I think, and they had to sit out for that? Wasn't that what they were saying?
I don't know about that, but I mean, I'm sure we'll get a lot of Tommy DeVito. And by the way, we're going to get some Tommy DeVito Monday on Patriots Monday. We're going to get to talk to Tommy.
Okay.
What is his name? Two Chains?
Two Chains. No
more Tommy Cutlets.
Yeah. Hey, real quick, I know we're going back, but what did you guys think of his performance in that first preseason game?
He started awful. He missed a couple throws early, and then he started to hit a couple, you know, as Kyle Williams had the big catch down the field. He looked okay.
It was odd because he had a few plays in a row where you're like, okay, boom, 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 and comebacks, and then there's like, dude, that was a terrible throw. Yeah. So, I don't know. I think all in all, I think he's going to be a more than serviceable backup. I don't think he's, a guy that you just start looking for his replacement. I think he's going to be okay. But there were a few plays that I was kind of like, what was that about? But I think he's performed well in this camp and in these joint practices, Rich.
Now, what do you think about actually, Jackson, do you have the Saquon Barkley clip? Because I thought this was interesting when he was asked about joint practices and kind of how – the whole view on the preseason seems to be changing, as you were just mentioning, when it comes to star players. Jackson, if you could play that Saquon Barkley clip, if you wouldn't mind. This is just from, I believe it was either earlier today or yesterday, when he was asked about this down at Gillette.
I hate joint practices, to be honest. I think one day's good, but, we play in an ego-filled sport with a lot of men, and I'm all about just putting the work in. It's good to go against someone new. I think we're at that part of camp where we needed to go against a new face. Honestly, I'm not really a fan of joint practice. More times than not, nothing good comes out of it. Like, you get the when you have the work, it's good, but then you get the push in, the shove in, and someone says this about you, and I'm like, I don't know, but I'm not that. You're this, and just like, it's immature when we get to that level. I got to do a better job too, because I'm a little troublemaker sometimes. But I was good this week.
A little troublemaker. I like that. You know why he says one day is good? Because what happens is, somebody gets you pretty good in that first one, and then they want to retaliate in the second one. So, the coaches are all night. They're looking at film. They're like, oh, okay, you're going to let this guy chump you? Okay, all right. And then so you see more fights in that second one. So I do think probably having, if you're going to do this, just one is probably better. But you get used to practicing against your guys. You kind of take care of each other in practice, where these joint practices, it's survival. You don't know the guy that you're playing across, what his, intention is. You assume he's there to knock your head off. So it just raises the stakes, and I think there's more opportunities to maybe somebody to get hurt in joint practices, especially if there's two back-to-back.
Well, Marcus Spears was on ESPN today, and he said he used to pick a guy on the other team, and they would fake a fight so they would end the practice early.
Like, I like that.
It's like the guys are trying to like outsmart the system.
Dude, I mean, that's smart, actually. Sure.
But if I was a coach, I would love it. I would, you know, how else are you going to figure out who is playing well? You got your best against their best. Yeah. You know, why wouldn't you love these joint practices? I mean, I guess you don't want somebody to get hurt, like you're saying.
Yeah.
But
I mean, but listen, I mean, football's a dangerous sport. You're either going to get hurt there, or you're going to get hurt later on. I just know that Jackson Dart thing I mentioned, by the way, he ended up getting put in the tent after a hard hit that he got from the safety from the Vikings, but he ended up going in back in the game, but they checked him for a concussion. But yeah, I mean, you never know. I mean, listen, you got to, but he's a young quarterback, so you got to put him out there. The whole thing with Drake, listen, who cares? I don't really care if he plays in the preseason. Nobody cares, I don't think. I think we're all just selfishly would love to see him sling it out there with A.J. Brown, but I think we're just going to have to wait. Now, is Christian Gonzalez going to be on the field with them when week one starts as we continue to count down? And I did hear Devin McCourty talking about how he believes it's going to get done, but it's just all in the language. But the language is important. Like, the language is the money. Saying. You know, like, I heard him say, yeah, it's pretty much good. It's just the way that it's written. It's the language. I mean, that's literally the contract. It could mean whether or not he gets like half the amount of guaranteed money that he wants, or whether he ends up getting some clause that's thrown in there where he, you know, doesn't get anything if he's not on the field for a certain number of games. It's everything at this point. And that's obviously what they're fighting over.
Well, Rich, I'm confused too by the upfront money. Like Ted was saying yesterday about, it's about that first 2 year money. Like what the number you hear is not all guaranteed. Well, then why even say it's guaranteed if it's not guaranteed? And do the Crafts ever do first 2 year money? Do they ever do that?
No. Why do they say guaranteed? It makes the agent look really good. Uh-huh. The agent wants those numbers out there because it makes him look really, really good. If those numbers are, you know, out there, even though they're misrepresented, no one knows that. You know, it's like they are guaranteed if, but they don't put the if you're on the team weeks, you know, years 3 and 4. You know, it's very misleading when they say fully guaranteed.
And Curran yesterday trying to make the case that, you know, Witherspoon's as good as Gonzalez. That worries me, that's the way the organization feels about it. And if Ted's right, Rich, and they don't do, you know, front-loaded contracts, I don't think this is getting done. I just don't. I mean, we have a lot of time left. We do have two and a half weeks. But didn't you think when Witherspoon got done over the weekend, this would be done sooner? You know, if it's going to get done, it was going to get done late in the week, at latest.
I mean, I thought you'd be looking at like a week. Yeah, right. Like after that was done, the framework is there. You know what the market is. You know what they're going to pay. And to Ted's point, Gonzalez is worth more just because he doesn't have this massive defensive front in front of him. Like Christian Gonzalez is doing way more work on this Patriots team to hold it down than Witherspoon is doing for Seattle. So he definitely deserves more.
PFF just had a ranking of all the secondaries in football.
I'd be showing the Patriots that. Oh, by the way.
The Patriots were number one of all 32 teams, but I bet you they're not number one in the front seven if that list comes out.
Definitely not.
Oh, they're,
no.
I thought the Madden ranking was enough. I thought being number one in Madden was, you know, all you needed to end up getting, you know, a ton of cash. Right now, listen, I hope that Robert Kraft feels offended that the world thinks he's cheap, because if you don't get this done, you're cheap. Yeah, I'm sorry. I know that you guys think that they're going to turn on Gonzalez. I don't believe that this agent's going rogue and asking for $1 zillion more than Witherspoon got. It's the same agent for two guys in the same position who are fairly comparable.
If the contract doesn't get done, Rich, I guarantee somebody, aka our guy Adam Schefter, is going to leak out what exactly the team is, what the player is asking for.
Yeah,
and how egregious the ask was. Don't you think that's?
I mean, there are already kind of leaks out there. I mean, Bedard, you know, I think Bert Breer a little bit to some degree.
Right. They haven't called Adam yet. They go in low level, and then when they really want to get the numbers out there, they call Schefter, and he puts it right out.
Yeah, and Adam's going to say that, I guarantee you it right now, as I said, if we had to choose between whether you think that this agent of Christian Gonzalez is going rogue and going asking for way over market, or if the Patriots are being cheap, I'm going to go Patriots are being cheap every time, because one's got a pretty good track record of it. You know, the numbers say they are cheap.
If they are offering him the Witherspoon deal, basically, like somewhere very close to that, or maybe slightly higher, if you're Gonzalez, should you take that? Would you take that? Yeah. Or do you hold out for a significant bump because you think you're that much better?
I mean, it would have to be front-loaded like his was. I mean, you're talking, it would have to be similar. Like, if they offered him, let's say they offered him the exact same deal,
right. Same
but then
deal.
They threw in $5 million extra that, you know, over the span of it, which is kind sure. of what they're looking at. Yes, you take that deal. That's what the market dictates. Take it okay. and run and go from whatever you're making now to $34 million a year, whatever that ends up working out to be.
Okay, yeah, and then if he doesn't take it, then is he being greedy?
It depends on what he's asking for. But as I said, right now, we don't know what he's asking for. And if I have to just pick out of thin air just from track records, whether they're asking for
you're
a
pivoting.
Lot or the Patriots are being cheap, if the Patriots are being cheap.
I'm trying to mousetrap you. So when we get the numbers out and he doesn't agree to it, then you're going to shift to feeling like Gonzalez is greedy. And that's when
yes,
the traps yeah, win.
Yes, Ken. If it ends up that he's asking for $60 million a year.
No, not 60. And, 35, and 36, 37, somewhere in that range with a lot of guaranteed
fair.
Money.
35 is fair. Like that's
oh,
that's,
well, that's
fair
$5 million
money.
More than the current guys are getting. I think.
I just said that for $5 million
more.
More.
So 31.
Okay.
AAV. Yeah. Mm. Average yeah. per year. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No question. All right. Yeah. By the way, Rafael Devers just spoke.
Yeah, I was going to say. Have you been seeing some of the comments that are coming out?
All I know is that
well, we have him.
Stiz yeah. is off. Texting us like, look at this guy. Can you believe this guy?
He's in the scrum. Look at him down there with a microphone. Stiz on his off day. That's awesome.
Unbelievable. All right. We will play Rafael Devers. You know, there's a lot of talk about whether he's going to, you know, get booed when he gets here. All I know is that this is just, I am fascinated. I'm fascinated with the reaction of the crowd. I'm fascinated with how Devers is going to act when he gets back. We have audio. Rafael Devers speaks about his homecoming, and we will play that right after this. You and your call, 617-779-7937. And broadcasting from the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and employee pricing for all. You pay what we pay. Ford, the official vehicle of Major League Baseball and that dirty water. And returning to Fenway today, Mr. Rafael Devers, who obviously was a very prolific batter here. He was, I think, what, the 10th most amount of home runs. Is that what it is in Red Sox history?
Home runs. Honestly, you look at his stat line, it is kind of impressive. I mean, he was, not the 10th greatest hitter in Red Sox history, but over 9 years, he was a pretty solid hitter. No doubt about that.
Without question. And obviously, there was 2018, and then there was the way things ended, which. Yeah, ended with a lot of, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. I know you need me to do that, but I'm not going to do that. And then Craig Breslow essentially said that there's something was amiss here, I believe, when he was talking about the culture in the clubhouse. And, of course, Rafael Devers ended up getting traded and then immediately did what the team had asked him to do, and that was play first base when he went over to the Giants. So he returns for the first time tonight. And, you know, there's a lot of questions about whether you should boo the guy, whether you shouldn't boo the guy. I personally think that, like, it's cheapening the boo. Like, he's not a guy that deserves to get booed. He's just a guy that doesn't deserve to be praised. You know, I mean, listen, he was played his ass off when he was here until he didn't at the very end, but he didn't end up, hurting anybody on the team. You know, the boos used to mean something. You know, like, there were guys who earned the boo.
Clemens,
like Roger Clemens coming back in a Yankees uniform, A-Rod, Matt Cook, Kyrie Irving. I mentioned these before. But Rafael Devers, listen, the relationship went bad at the end. But he, like, embarrassed Gerrit Cole here. He played 1,000-plus games for the Red Sox. You know, at some point, boos need standards. So, but Rafael Devers, nonetheless, talked to the media. And, Jackson, if you happen to have any of it, I would like to hear his translator. And sure. So Rafael Devers was talking about how he's going to be received. He said he didn't know how it would be. He didn't know if he'd be cheered or booed. But he did thank Sox fans for the support through the career and said that he always played hard and put in 100% for them. Interesting. And then he said he didn't want to think much about the past, particularly how his Sox career ended. But he did say, quote, you learn from your mistakes. Mm-hmm. So the end of it there does sound like he probably realizes that he was a little bit of a, you know, a little, what do you call it, a donkey nuthole, you know, at the end of it.
That's right. First step is admission, right? Admitting you have a problem.
It
so,
is.
Good. He also said he had no regrets, though. So if no regrets, not exactly like he's falling on the sword here. But again, to support him, Cora definitely screwed up. I believe
donkey
Cora
nut
even
hole.
Admitted that.
How did he screw up exactly?
Cora did not tell him that they were going to bring Bregman in. And he didn't, until they signed Bregman, tell him that they wanted to move him off third base. Now, first base came later, but they said initially when Bregman was signed, We're not asking you to play. We just want you to DH. You don't have to move positions. And then they changed that again later because Cora had sort of boxed himself in by telling him they weren't going to ask him.
And you think Devers was an accomplished enough player and an important enough player that he deserved to be, I don't know, told all these things ahead of time?
Yes, they should have looped him in. He was the face of the franchise at the time, right or wrong, and they should have looped him into their negotiations with Bregman beforehand. And if they were going to move him the first down the road, if there was any shot of that, they should have been honest with him.
The thing that shocks me the most, though, was that, you know, Ted, you said it best. They asked him to do less work, and he wouldn't do it. Like, hey, man, BDH. And he's like, no.
No.
And
He did eventually. He didn't participate in spring training much, which led off to a pretty bad start to the year. But he did eventually play DH.
But at first, he was like, why are you being a butt about that? And then they ended up, you know, asking him to go to first base, and he said no to that. And then immediately, once he goes to the Giants, he's playing first base. It just seemed like he had some sort of thing like, you can't tell me what to do. I'm a star.
No doubt. Yep.
You know, and I think that, and that's why, and I'm not trying to say he's like this, but that's why I almost like that Roman had to go through what he went through this season. I'm not going to compare the two attitudes of the both because I don't know about Roman, but I do know that he was the chosen one at the beginning of the season. He was the face of the franchise. And sometimes it takes you being able to look at the team that you're not with and watch them do great things without you that humbles you to the point where you come back and realize, hey, man, it's not just me. I'm on a team. I'm on a team full of guys, and we all got to pull our own weight. And when it comes to things like being asked to play a different position, if you want the team to win and you don't want that people to have the impression that you're a selfish a-hole, then you got to do what it takes. So
that's a good theory. I mean, I hope that's true. Maybe you're right. I mean, that's like sort of what Ted went through under Bill Parcells, right? Like, you loved his coaching. He was tough on guys, and then he'd break you down and build you back up. So Roman has had that happen to him sort of accidentally.
Yeah, before I throw flowers towards Roman, I want to see if he actually uses what happened, you know, these last couple months, you know, and learns from it and actually comes back a better, you know, player for it. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the hope. And I do think, however, that when he arrives, he's not going to be an issue as far as attitude is concerned. There's no possible way you can be. I mean, he's like a young guy. He's got these alphas in there like Contreras. You heard what he said when we apparently we were the ones who informed Contreras that Roman was coming back. He's like, I didn't even hear that he was going to be in Portland. And he was like, but he better be ready. And so can you imagine walking into that clubhouse and Contreras is sitting there like expecting you to don't F up what we did for the last couple of months. We got a good thing going here. Don't be the cocky a-hole coming out and just, you know, trying to take over the culture of the clubhouse, because you need to adapt to us. We don't need to adapt to you anymore.
I wonder if they'll say anything to him. They're just going to give him, like, the cold shoulder, like, pretend he's yes, he is a rookie. You know, pretend he's a rookie and just don't even speak to him.
They're going
to
be
the first home run.
They're going to be cool to him. Yeah, they're going to be, because they need him. They do need him. And they also probably understand the position he's in. I do think that Contreras, for as much of a hard-ho he kind of is, I think that he gets it. I think he gets that if you want this guy to be effective, you got to take him in. You need to hold him to a high standard. But at the same time, you need to be a little patient with him, because especially Contreras with what he's going through right now with, you know, all being banged up all over the place, you would think that he would also understand that he's not going to be great instantly and he's going to take a little bit to ramp up. But I think you can notice whether someone's taking this return seriously or you're jacking around and being like the guy said, going to Locals Taqueria in the Southie and hitting on all the chicks. So I just kind of figure that I think this is going to go well. I think it will go well when he returns.
Is Contreras the undisputed leader of this team?
I asked Tracy that a couple of weeks ago, and he said yes. He is the heartbeat of the team.
I would say yes. From where I sit, it seems like he is the guy. Mm-hmm. You know.
All right.
I thought when you asked him that question the other day, Rich, his response, or not ask, or just let him know that, hey, you know, by the way, I thought his response was measured, and honestly, it was kind of like, man, if I'm Roman and I'm listening to his response, I'm like, dude, I'm not sure. You know, that guy's really excited about me coming back, but it was like he's going to be watching me when I come back, so I got to make sure I'm doing what I need to do, so I don't get the wrath of Wilson Contreras. So he's clearly, I think, the way he spoke about Roman Anthony coming back to me made me feel like he is the leader of this team.
Let's go to Jim in Wakefield on line one. What's up, Jim? How's it going?
Okay, guys, listen, you know what? I've been driving around listening to you, and, you know, you're forgetting certain aspects of what happened when all of this went down with Raffy Devis. Raffy Devis, they won, okay, they bring in Bregman, they want him to DH. Okay, he wants to DH, and then Cassis goes down. Now, Cassis goes down, and they're like, okay, now we have a need. We need somebody who can, one, a power hitter, and still can play the position. And Devis says, nope, I don't want to do it.
Yep.
So what happens? Kristen Cassis, who has been on fire, was batting 400, having a great start to his rookie season, says he offers. He goes, I'll play first base. And Raffy Devis goes to him and berates him and starts yelling at him and telling him he's never to show him up again. He's a lousy teammate.
Do we know that? I'm sorry. Did I miss that? Do we know that he went over and berated Tristan Cassis?
That was reported. So, yes, we do know that. He was a lousy teammate and a cancer in the kitchen. Oh,
the kitchen.
Sorry, that's what I always say about my employees. He was a cancer in the clubhouse.
He might have been there too. He ate a lot of food.
I thought that was some term I never heard before. A cancer in the kitchen. No, you literally work in a kitchen. And
I don't remember him ripping Devers or Cassis, but maybe he did. I mean,
I don't remember that. I remember him not wanting to go play first base when after Cassis was injured. Yeah, I remember that.
A couple texts on this, 603 text. You guys are missing a huge point. He was the worst third baseman in baseball and wouldn't give up his position for an all-star.
That's true. That is true.
That is true.
207 texter, petulant child. He should be booed for still needing a translator after 10 years. I mean, come on.
It happened so fast with Rafael. Like, just all of a sudden, he was.
People were yelling at John Henry to sign him.
Yeah.
And then months later, he's gone.
And I get it. Look, there were some bad decisions he made at the end by, you know, and how he portrayed himself was not good. But man, dude, what about the 8 years before that?
Right, we're booing too much nowadays. Like, as I said, the boos used to be sacred. They've lost their power. It's like, I mean, listen, he was a dummy at the end, absolutely. But I mean, the dude was really freaking good. Like, if you're gonna boo Jaylen Brown, I know that we disagree, Ted. Like, when he tried, you don't boo Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown helped you win a championship. He was the MVP of the finals. You know, listen, things ended weird, sure, but things end weird always. They almost never have like the fairy tale ending that you want. You know, Brady ended weird here, but then he got weird afterwards. You know what I mean? It was like, it wasn't the ending that made people hate Brady. It's very, very strange how we just continue to throw these boos out when they used to mean something to me. Mm-hmm. All right. 617-779-7937. We'll take your calls because this is interesting. And meanwhile, I'll look up and find out if there ever was he got in his face and he started yelling at him, which I'd never heard anything about that with Raffy Devers. And I guess he was a cancer in the kitchen, according to the man who works at a restaurant. Maybe we'll take your calls right after this. Guy Rich Shirtleaf, Ken Laird, Ted Johnson, live from the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio. Brought to you by New England Ford Dealers and Employee Pricing for All. You pay what we pay. Ford, the official vehicle of Major League Baseball and That Dirty Water. And you can call us at 617-779-7937. We're talking about the return of Rafael Devers and whether or not he's going to get booed when he gets here. Also, Wilson Contreras, you know, sending a message to Roman Anthony when we asked him about what he thinks about his return. First of all, he was just like, he's returning. I guess we informed him this week. But then I thought sent a pretty good message out there. Like, you know, we hope he's ready because, you know, this is time for the rubber to hit the road. Let's go to Tony on line one. Tony, what's going on, buddy? How you doing?
Hey, Tony.
Tony.
Hey, what's up, Tony? How you doing, man?
Yep. Good, my friend. I'm calling about, to be honest with you, you guys keep mentioning Contreras as the leader. This guy's a hothead, and Tracy has to pull these guys in a little bit because Duran's out of hand. Contreras, like, they seem to do whatever they want to do. And I'm looking for Tracy to step it up, show a little balls to keep these guys in line.
Can I ask you, Tony, real quick, like, what is Wilson doing that's out of line right now?
Well, he's not jogging down to first base. He's arguing with the friggin' fans. A manager has to say, hey, calm down. And he hasn't done it with Duran. He hasn't reeled these guys in. Contreras is a ticking time bomb. I like the way he plays, but he has to tone it down and not be paying attention to what a fan has to say.
Well, Tony, actually, two things on that. By the way, you're making a decent point when it comes to Duran. I think so. But Contreras, we had a caller on yesterday, someone who was actually at the game and like heard the back and forth. And what Contreras was actually doing was this fan had been yelling and like picking fights, literally picking fights with the pitchers. And when Contreras came back, he saw this fan jawing off at them and just looked at him. And what he was saying was, "What are you doing, man? Cut it out. Stop. You're being an idiot." So he was looking out for his pitchers. He was standing up for them, which I do think is something that a leader does.
You know something? You can't be putting lighter fluid on a fire. As a matter of fact, I heard that interview with that girl. He wasn't saying anything out of line. He's calling a pitcher a bum. They're staring him down. This is a manager's job to reel these guys in.
He was picking fights with them. He said he wanted to fight them, which was kind of funny. I mean, it's lame because it's super lame because, you know, you can't, like, actually fight the guy.
Well, ask Ted. There's drunks at every game. I mean, who cares?
You're right.
Ted can confirm.
Teddy.
Yes, sir.
How many times were you guys walking off the field and people were yelling at you in Pittsburgh and New York? Come on.
All the time. I think he's got a kind of a point, Rich. I mean, you know, I mean, there is if you don't like some of the behavior from the Red Sox, that is to me the manager's job to say, hey, you know, knock that off. And,
Tracy is the one pointing out fans and having them removed. I mean, he's part of that process.
Which is awful. Yeah. We confronted Tracy on that too. And, you know, we told him we thought it was awful that he picked somebody out in the stands to get ejected. And to be quite honest, you know, I did call out Tracy when everything was going on with Duran because I said, just tell Duran to just not respond. Like, don't respond and it goes away, because the minute you do, people knows it gets under your skin. And I guess it's the same. And you know what? To be quite honest, if I'm saying that with Duran, you should be able to say it with Contreras as well. You're absolutely right. But the one part of it, and the one thing that I know a good point that you might have made, Ken, was that is that kind of chip on the shoulder, is that something that makes them great? Like, I mean, do they almost need that to be able to play?
I think they need a little bit of some kind of sandpaper. I just don't think there's a lot of leaders on this team. There are a lot of young guys, a lot of new guys that are from other teams that are new to this team that don't have the confidence to take leadership roles. And they kind of need that guy like that Wilson Contreras is to kind of, I don't know, I think, keep things interesting. You know what I mean?
He's definitely Redline Wilson. This is when they acquired him. The rumor was he's an acquired taste. Like, some people love him, some people do not. That's just who he is.
Let's go to John on line two. John, what's happening, buddy? How you doing?
Hey, John.
Good. You know, three quick things, but with Duran, a lot of the stuff he says is never actually proven, and that's my big problem with Jaron Duran is he says these things and then they just go away. And nobody ever has any proof that what he said actually happens. We all see when Wilson Contreras says something, you can see it. Yeah, it happened. And that's the difference.
Yeah.
But, Devers was on his way to becoming Pablo Sandoval at third base. I mean, he was getting heavy. He was, you know, the worst third baseman in the league. Yeah. All the only thing he didn't do was bust a belt buckle swinging his bat. So, I mean, you know, I'm not going to say he was a bad hitter, but, you know, clearly he was 3 years into a 12-year deal, and he was already showing signs that he was no way going to be able to be a third baseman by year six. So if you're going to bring somebody in to be better and you're not willing to acknowledge that they will make the team better, that makes you a little bit of a problem.
They should have transitioned him to first sooner because he's doing that for San Francisco now and seems like he's fine.
You're right. There's fault on both sides. Real quick, if Contreras has a brain in his head, he will take Anthony under his wing, if anything else, and stand up for the kid and make sure he falls in line and don't ostracize him because all these guys know talent when they see it. Yep. And clearly this kid has talent. And Ted, finally, please, I feel bad. Ken, call Dino and get Ted into MediaWise, because I feel like his kid lost a gig babysitting over my comments with Trevor Story. I have a grandson now, Ted. He's 8 months old. If your kid needs a job, I'll get her a gig. But Please, don't bite the hand that feeds you. Now she's got no work, and the kid's penniless and broke.
Yeah, you did probably cost your daughter the babysitter.
Oh, the, I was like, where's he going?
You said your daughter was babysitting Trevor's Story, and you felt bad that you ripped on Trevor's Story yesterday and said, please don't let it lose her gig because of it.
Great point. Don't bite the hand that feeds, not probably the smartest. Trevor, you're a good guy. I don't know if you should be coming back and demanding that you have your role. Your old role should not just be automatically given right back to you, considering kind of where you've been and what this team is doing right now.
By the way, we get the people queuing up outside our studios here on Lansdowne Street, Rich, and we already saw one Rafi Devers shirt go by. I see a Roman Anthony out there, so all the old jerseys are coming back. It's a great feeling.
By the way, to John's point, the one thing about Roman Anthony, Contreras taking him under his wing, I think that comment he made was like the step number one.
I agree. You know? I love John's point on that. I think that's a great call, and that would be – I think Roman needs that. He got that with Bregman last year. I think Wilson, the way he answered that question, it almost made me feel like he feels kind of like he might be doing that. So it's a great point by John, and I hope that's what happens.
And by the way, the previous caller who said Devers had ripped Casas, looking back at it, he probably meant Christian Campbell. There was a report that he was mad at Campbell for playing first. But then that was disputed by Jeff Passan. He said it was untrue, according to multiple reports.
There you go.
So just all right. Because I had never heard any of that. That was completely new to me. So, all right. Well, thank you for checking that out and making sure we get the facts straight. All right. 617-779-7937. We'll continue to take your calls. It is a big day at Fenway Park where we're broadcasting from. And Rafael Devers is back. So is Marcelo Meyer. And
actually, somebody just corrected me that Meyer is not back yet. He's on a rehab assignment and may join the team maybe this weekend, but not tonight. So
okay, all right. Well, there you go. So you got Rafael Devers and a bunch of people who may or may not boo. We'll get to that right after this. Rich Shirtlieb, Ken Laird, three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson. 617-779-7937 is the number that you can call. I want to take this call real quick because quickly earlier on in the show, it was awesome because on WEI right around 1 o'clock, Rich Keefe and Mego had on Josh McDaniels, and it's great because it is a Patriots Friday in which we're going to have different coordinators from the team rotating, and Josh McDaniels will obviously be making several appearances during the season, and he was asked about that whole Tom Brady helping out the Seattle Seahawks during the Super Bowl theory that was out there. By the way, leaked out by, insinuated by the coach himself of the Seattle Seattle Seahawks. Mike McDonald. And then Mike Vrabel was interviewed about it later on and seemed to believe that that was the case. And so when let's go and play it. If you don't mind, do you have it there by any chance, Jackson? Let's go ahead and play this. This is Josh McDaniels' response to being asked about whether or not he believes Tom Brady actually helped the Seahawks in the Super Bowl.
You think Tom Brady helped the Seattle Seahawks prepare for you guys in the Super Bowl?
I have no idea.
If he did, would it bother you?
I wouldn't have a dog in that fight if that was the case. I don't know. I don't know, you know, what that, you know, would or wouldn't have done. And again, I'm sure when you play in that game, there's 2 weeks before the game happens. There's so much that can be taken in terms of information and background and so on and so forth. I know this. What we do and how we do it is really going to end up being the ultimate determiner of whether or not we win or lose games or that kind of a game, certainly. So, I know I didn't do enough to help us win the game, and hopefully we'll have an opportunity to compete against them here in a few weeks.
Okay, by saying I don't have a dog in that fight at the beginning, obviously they're pissed. Like they obviously believe.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Vrabel straight up said that he believes they helped him, and then Josh McDaniels, that answer says everything to me, doesn't it, Ted?
Yeah, no, it does, and I don't mean to. We're still talking about the same thing, but I just want to pivot to what Spillane said about it and not Josh McDaniels. But just real quick, because we haven't talked about this part of what Spillane said. He was reacted to he was asked earlier today about what Tom said. And he said,
I have that audio.
We have the clip.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, okay. Let's play that clip because I'm fascinated to hear what you guys think about this one specific part that he said and answered this question. So listen to his answer and then let's talk about it.
We'll get you out on this. Right before the Super Bowl, you were asked about the former Tom Brady, former Patriots quarterback Tom Brady, saying he didn't have a dog in the fight, and it bothered you. We never had a chance to talk to you about that. Did that irritate guys in that locker room that the greatest quarterback of all time, who has a statue the size of a house in front of the building, said he didn't have a dog in the fight entering that game with the Seahawks?
It irritated me, and it made me feel sad for him. Spending 20 years here, obviously went on to do amazing, great things, not only on the football field, but in the community. And to say that he had no care in the world, it irritated me. It made me feel sad for him. But at the end of the day, that was just my personal opinion. Everyone else has their own opinions in the locker room.
Is that interesting? Did you find that interesting, the part where he says it made me feel sad for him?
Totally.
What do you think he meant when he said that? Like, what does that mean to you?
I think these are young guys who are looking at somebody who should be in perfect harmony with the region he played in. And it's just like, what? What happened here?
Yeah.
Like, this guy is doing what? You know?
Yeah.
Like, who's advising you? Yeah, it's like, who's advising you? And you know what? That's an interesting perspective. I feel sad for, and it's crazy to say that about a guy who seemingly has everything. I mean, he's
correct.
The greatest of all time in his craft. He was born good looking. He, you know, has tons of money. You know, the contract that he signed to broadcast is zillions of dollars, but they still feel sad because he's apparently surrounded himself with yes men who let him say dumb things like that, and he really has no kind of home now. You know, he's not like a New Englander, doesn't like New England. He's obviously not the whole thing about Florida. I don't even know where is home for him? I don't know. And it's a really sad thing. He seems to have kind of shot himself in the foot over and over again. That's right. By himself.
Well, no, but it's like when you guys made the Super Bowl in the 90s, you probably had the 86 Patriots on your side. You know, this team, when they went to the Super Bowl last year, were probably like, where are the alumni like supporting us, especially the most important one?
I do. Spillane's been here for a minute, but I kind of dig how he approached that question. Excuse me. So it's just it was an interesting way in which I think Robert, you know, kind of explained it, but I can get down with it. It is kind of sad that he, you know, after all this time, that he doesn't feel more of an affinity for the area and for the team that he played for and won all those championships with. It's almost like it was just a means to an end for him.
Yeah, definitely. Let's go to Mike on line 3. Mike, what's happening, buddy? How you doing?
Mike.
Hello.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Mike, what's up, man? How you doing?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing good, bud.
Doing good. First off, great job with the Jimmy Fund. You guys are awesome. Can't believe the number you raised. Excellent job by everybody there.
Thanks, man. Yeah, the donors were
Tom
awesome.
Tom Brady.
Yes.
Yep. I got to tell you, I really don't care what he does in his own personal life. What mattered most to me, and still to this day, is what did the guy do on the football field? He brought 6 world championships here. That's it. That's all he owes us nothing. And if the truth be told, Mr. Kraft, who always said he was like his son, well, guess what? If he was like his son, he would be an owner, part owner of the team. He wouldn't be with the friggin' Raiders. It makes no sense to me that this guy's with the Raiders. They cut him short on contracts. They always got him to take something else. I think that had a lot to do with Mr. Kraft and his own personal beliefs, and that's what happened. But he was a good guy here, whether he was in Boston or New York. Who cares? He performed on the field. That's the bottom line with me.
All right, Mike, let me ask you this before you go. I want to ask you, to me, the place where I saw the most people do a 180 on Brady was when it was revealed, and Vrabel believes it, and it sounds like McDaniels does as well, that Brady might have given inside information to the Seattle Seahawks against the Patriots in this Super Bowl. Does that change your mind at all about what you think of Tom Brady? If he indeed talked to the Seahawks and gave up the secrets that he would know because Josh McDaniels is the guy setting up the offensive plays.
You know what? It doesn't make a difference to me because of the fact he really should be with the Patriots as an owner of that team. So they dumped on him. Well, guess what? Turnaround is fair play. So he dumps on the team. Well, he dumps on him big time, as far as I'm concerned.
Hey, I mean, thank you. Mike's making good arguments, though. Don't you?
What about a sequel? 180 for Brady. That's a good one.
I like that. I like that. Instead of 80 for Brady,
yeah.
180 for Brady.
Thank you.
I don't know. I think some of Mike's points are kind of like, you know what? He's right. I mean, why isn't he part owner of the Patriots? You know, I mean, I don't know. Maybe, why didn't he get top of the market?
Do we know he wanted to come back here? If he didn't want to be caught dead in New England living anymore, would he want to part owner?
I don't think he's living in Las Vegas, to be honest, either.
Well, he supposedly he's got a place some kind of penthouse suite at one of the casinos.
All right.
The Circus. You know, I think he chose the finest one there.
Yeah. Tropicana.
Yeah. Can you kind of see Mike's points? Like, if the Patriots made him part of this.
If true.
Assuming that Brady wanted to be part of the Patriots ownership and assuming that the Patriots said, we're not going to sell, can you see maybe why Tom might be miffed?
I don't care. As a Patriots fan, if you gave inside information that helped the Seahawks beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl, then screw
Fredo.
You. I don't care. Fredo. I don't care about any of that stuff. Whatever personal things that you have, you screwed over your Patriots. You screwed over my team, the team that I like. So yeah, screw you. You know, that was the, and everything else, he's a total weirdo and he's done weird stuff and it's been funny. And I've been like, it doesn't matter. He won 6 Super Bowls. But the minute he allegedly did that, that's when it turned for me. And I think it turned for a lot of other people too. I
Al
can't
Davis's
be alone on that.
Kind of looks like Mo Green, too. Doesn't that have a little similar like Vegas thing going on?
That's right, Mo Green.
That's very true.
Oh, man. All right, 617-779-7937. You can give us a call. It is Rich, Ken, and Ted Johnson. And Rob Bradford is going to join us and give us his take on everything that's going on with